The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good evening. For those of you who I have not met, my name is Andrea, and I'll be talking this evening. When we encounter the teachings of the Buddha, listen to the teachings of the Buddha, we often find some of these teachings hard to understand. They go against the grain of what seems to be our common sense understanding. So the teachings actually ask us to look at some of our assumptions, some of these assumptions that lie behind our common sense understanding, to question them, to explore them. They basically require us to transform our understanding about some very basic aspects of our experience. Tonight I'd like to talk about one of those areas that is a little challenging, pushes the edges for us a little bit. A place in our practice where we need to transform our understanding in order to truly practice, live, experience the truth of the Buddha's teachings. And this is with respect to sense pleasure. We don't necessarily like to think about how our relationship to sense pleasure needs to be transformed. So in this talk, I'm going to share quite a few of the words of the Buddha himself. And I'm going to start by reading a section from a sutta that explores or mentions a paradox about the teachings themselves. People generally find pleasure in attachments, take delight in attachments, and enjoy attachments. But when the Dhamma of non-attachment is taught by the Tathagata, Tathagata is the way the Buddha referred to himself, when the Dhamma of non-attachment is taught by the Tathagata, people wish to listen to it, give it ear, and try to understand it. So there's truth to that. We do delight in attachment. We like the things of pleasure. We like the fact of ownership, the feeling of control that we have things. And yet, when we hear this teaching of non-attachment, something resonates with us. Because we do at some level understand that our attachments aren't really going to make us truly happy. At some level we understand that, at some level. So to deepen our perspective on sense pleasure, to transform our understanding of it, the Buddha offered a framework, essentially a three-step framework to explore sense pleasure in our experience. And this is the framework of gratification, danger, and escape. This framework of gratification, danger, and escape is one that the Buddha used with respect to several different areas, sense pleasure being just one. I'm going to read a section of the Buddha's own exploration of this. a little bit of his exploration of this. Before my enlightenment, it occurred to me, what is the gratification in the world? What is the danger in the world? And what is the escape from the world? Then it occurred to me, whatever pleasure and joy there is in the world, this is the gratification in the world. That the world is impermanent, bound up with suffering, and subject to change, this is the danger in the world. The removal and abandoning of desire and lust for the world, this is the escape from the world. I set out seeking the gratification in the world. Whatever gratification there is in the world, that I have found. I have clearly seen with wisdom just how far the gratification in the world extends. I set out seeking the danger in the world. Whatever danger there is in the world, that I have found. I have clearly seen with wisdom just how far the danger in the world extends. I set out seeking an escape from the world. Whatever escape there is from the world, that I have found. I have clearly seen with wisdom just how far the escape from the world extends. So this framework of gratification, danger, and escape basically acknowledges what we all know to be a common sense understanding, that there is gratification in the world, that there is happiness and joy in the world, and that there is happiness and joy with respect to sense pleasure. So we start from this common sense understanding, and then exploring in our own experience, what is sense pleasure? What is the actual gratification I get from sense pleasure? And then the question the Buddha explored, and how far does this gratification extend? So it's clear that there is a kind of gratification in sense pleasure. When something pleasant happens to our five sense bases, we like it. There's a feeling of pleasantness, of joy that is, in a sense, that feels gratifying, feels satisfying. So we acknowledge the truth of that fact and then bring our mindfulness to understand that gratification. Understand the gratification. So the Buddha is not asking us to simply, say sense pleasure is bad. He wants us to understand it, and he's asking us to start from where we are, which is this common sense understanding that sense pleasure is gratifying. So we pay attention to sense pleasure and the gratification we get from it. What happens to it as we explore it? The Buddha actually offered a number of similes for sense pleasure in the suttas. And many of these similes are hard for us to understand. He compares sense pleasures to a man holding a blazing grass torch when he's standing with the wind blowing towards himself. He compares sense pleasures to a burning charcoal pit and being dragged towards a burning charcoal pit by two strong men. So these are a little hard for us to relate to. But he does offer a couple of others that I will explore with you that I find a little more accessible to us. He compares sense pleasures to a dream. He says, suppose a man dreamt about lovely parks, lovely groves, lovely meadows, and lovely lakes, and on waking he saw nothing of it. So too, a noble disciple considers sense pleasures have been compared to a dream. So essentially, what he's saying is that a sense pleasure is a kind of an illusion, or it is there's a sense of satisfaction in the dream as long as we're in the dream. If you're having a really pleasant dream, as long as you're in the dream, there's a kind of a pleasantness to it. When you wake up from the dream, it kind of goes poof. Likewise, he's saying that As long as there's a kind of delusion about what sense pleasures actually are, there's a pleasantness to them. But when they are really understood, they're seen to be like a dream, an illusion. He also compares sense pleasures to borrowed goods, that if you have borrowed some things, I'll read the section. Suppose a man borrowed goods on loan, a fancy carriage and a fine jeweled carriage, and proceeding and surrounded by those borrowed goods, he went into the marketplace. Then the owner, seeing them, would take them back. So the sense pleasures he's pointing to here are like borrowed goods in that they don't really belong to us. If we try to hold on to them, they will go away. So observing sense pleasure itself, we actually start to see that it's not the sense pleasure itself in and of itself that sense pleasure in and of itself isn't particularly problematic. It's our relationship to the sense pleasure that creates the difficulty. It's our attachment to the sense pleasure. It's our wanting it. It's our feeling at some level that there is something about that sense pleasure that is going to make me happy. And we don't actually believe, for instance, if you're, you know, craving some chocolate and going to have some chocolate, that that piece of chocolate is going to make you happy for the rest of time. But there is a way that we do orient our lives around the next moment of sense pleasure. We feel that our lives are a success if we can arrange our lives such that we are either planning and anticipating the next moment of sense pleasure or experiencing a moment of sense pleasure. So we seem to feel that that constitutes success. If we can arrange our lives such that we have this kind of nonstop stream of sense pleasure. And to some extent, we do believe that. There's a way in which we are, that we fundamentally believe that that is how happiness comes to us. So in looking at sense pleasure, observing it, looking at the gratification of it, we start to see that the sense pleasure itself doesn't last very long, and that what happens as that sense pleasure ends is that there's this wanting for another one. So that the cycle of gratification is bound up with this cycle of wanting another hit of sense pleasure. So there's a kind of a misunderstanding that we have around sense pleasure. A misunderstanding about thinking that actually that this way of living, of constructing our lives around sense pleasure, will make us happy. That is actually a misperception around sense pleasure. So this cycle of wanting and having that we all get kind of hooked into, when we observe this process, we see that when we get something that we want, there's a moment of feeling like we're a success, like we've gotten this thing that we want. We feel that moment of pleasure of having that thing. When that moment fades, then there's something else that we start wanting. When we observe this carefully, we start to see that the feeling of the wanting itself is actually unpleasant. Now, this unpleasant feeling of the wanting is actually often kind of hidden from us because we are so caught into the anticipation. We are projecting forward, thinking about the pleasantness we're going to experience, and that anticipation itself has a pleasant feeling to it. So that anticipation masks the kind of dissatisfying quality of not having what we want. So as you begin to actually explore this process around sense pleasure and what's gratifying about it, you start to feel the wanting. You actually start to recognize that wanting itself, which is bound up with the sense pleasure, that wanting is not pleasant. It's suffering. The wanting itself is suffering. Now, when we get what we want, we get this double hit because we get the moment of sense pleasure from the having the thing that we want. And we get the pleasantness of the unpleasant wanting ending. That's actually really potent. That's a potent combination for us. It feels really good when we both get what we want and that unpleasantness feeling of the wanting ends. And so that further sets up the cycle of, wow, that felt pretty good. I think I want another one of those moments. And then we're on to the next wanting. One of the, I think, the most amazing things that the Buddha pointed to was looking at this wanting itself. Because it's really the ending of the wanting that is the most, that is the bigger aspect of satisfaction, in a sense. If you observe this in your own experience, if you observe wanting in your own experience, and don't act on that wanting, just watch the wanting. It'll disappear at some point. Now, while you're watching that wanting, it's like a feeling of an itch or something. It's like, you know, oh, it's so uncomfortable to sit there with that feeling of wanting and not act on it. But when that feeling of wanting goes away, the suffering goes away. And when that feeling of wanting goes away, there's then no need to have the thing that we wanted. When the wanting ends, the suffering ends. It's quite an amazing thing to experience. So we don't need to sidestep this common sense understanding about sense pleasure, that it is gratifying. But the teaching that the Buddha suggests is to understand this gratification. How far does this gratification extend? If you actually explore it, you'll find that it's actually this cycle of wanting and having doesn't actually produce that much happiness. And this leads us to begin to understand the danger with respect to grasping after sense pleasure. So the most, one of the most fundamental ways that danger is connected with this grasping after sense pleasure is because is that misunderstanding, that misperception that we believe that stringing together these sense pleasures will make us happy. And if, as we stay under the illusion of that misperception, it keeps us from being able to see where true happiness lies. So it keeps us kind of tied to this cycle of having, wanting, having, wanting, having, wanting, having. So this misperception itself is a danger because it keeps us tied to this and unable to see beyond that kind of happiness. The Buddha also points to many other downfalls of sense pleasure, other dangers with respect to sense pleasure. He says that we suffer in the pursuit of sense pleasure. We want something. We work to get it. And in that working to get it, some of us in Silicon Valley spend hours cramped in front of a computer with our bodies sore and tired and getting carpal tunnel syndrome. And so we suffer in the process of the actual getting. Again, we don't tend to think about that because we don't tend to think about that as a drawback to the sense pleasure. It seems more like something that is, well, it's an acceptable side effect. We think of it as an acceptable side effect. If we try to get the things that we want and we don't succeed, we feel like we're a failure. That's a danger. If we get the things we want, if we succeed in getting the things we want, then we feel like we have to protect them and keep them. We're afraid of losing them, of breaking them. That's a danger. He says, because of this kind of wanting sense pleasure, people tend to break into other people's homes, they commit adultery. Because of this pursuit of pleasure, of wanting to have things that others have, countries invade other countries. Because of pursuit of power, control, and wealth, rulers oppress their own people. So not only our own personal suffering can be traced to this, the dangers of sense pleasure, but so too can many of the problems with society be traced to this misunderstanding that this is where happiness lies. As a support to help us as we begin to understand the danger of sense pleasure, the teachings point us to the fact that there are better sources of happiness to be had than this continual grasping after sense pleasure. Another quote from the Buddha. Having understood as they really are, the origin, the passing away, the gratification, the danger, and the escape from the case of, in the case of sensual pleasures, I abandon craving for sensual pleasures. Note here that he says he abandoned craving for sensual pleasures, not that he abandoned sensual pleasures. I removed the fever of sensual pleasures, and I dwell without thirst, without a mind inwardly at peace. I see other people who are not free from lust for sensual pleasures, being devoured by craving for sensual pleasures, burning with the fever of sensual pleasures, indulging in sensual pleasures, and I do not envy them, nor do I delight therein. Why is that? Because there is a delight apart from sensual pleasures, apart from unwholesome states, which surpasses even divine bliss. Since I take delight in that, I do not envy what is inferior. So here he's basically pointing to there's kind of three levels he points to. He says there's sense pleasure, and then there's divine bliss, which is essentially a kind of meditative pleasure. That meditative pleasure surpasses sense pleasure. It's satisfying in a way than the sense pleasure, the pleasure of sense pleasure, the pleasure of meditated bliss. And then he points to a happiness or a pleasure beyond even that, which is he's pointing to the pleasure of non-attachment, of complete freedom from clinging. If there's nothing that we cling to, suffering ceases. That cessation of suffering is the highest bliss, the Buddha says. Freedom. The Buddha also explored some similes for the pitfalls of sense pleasure. There's a very striking simile in the suttas about this. It's not a perfect analogy, but it's quite powerful. It's about lepers. And in the Buddha's day, there were apparently in India at the time quite a few lepers. And one of the things the lepers apparently did was to cauterize their wounds over a charcoal pit, over a fire. And he says this. Suppose there was a leper with sores and blisters on his limbs, being devoured by worms, scratching the scabs off the openings of his wounds with his nails, cauterizing his body over a burning charcoal pit. Then a physician treats him. The physician would make medicine for him, and by means of that medicine, the man would be cured of his leprosy. Then two strong men would seize him by both arms and drag him towards a burning charcoal pit. Would that man twist his body this way and that? And the person he's speaking to says, yes, because the fire is painful to touch, hot and scorching. And the Buddha responds, what do you think? Is it only now that the fire is painful to touch, hot and scorching? Or previously too was that fire painful to touch, hot and scorching? And the man replies, that fire is now painful to touch, and previously too that fire was painful to touch. For when that man was a leper with sores and blisters on his limbs, his faculties were impaired. Thus, though that the fire was painful to touch, he acquired a mistaken perception of it as pleasant. So this is, again, pointing to that misperception. We misperceive that sense pleasure and the gratification around sense pleasure is actually something to aspire for. There's another analogy that the Buddha gives around the leper scratching his wounds. And this one is maybe a little easier for us to understand. If you get poison oak or have a really strong mosquito bite, it feels good to scratch that itch. There's a moment of satisfaction when you scratch that itch. But as soon as you stop, it explodes in more intense itching than there was before. That's the kind of endless cycle that we end up on with sense pleasure. The Buddha says, the more they indulge in sense pleasure, the more their craving for sense pleasure increases, and the more they are burned by the fever of sense pleasures. Yet they find a certain measure of satisfaction, enjoyment, in dependence on the five chords of sense pleasure, the five sense bases. So as we explore the gratification with respect to sense pleasure, the more we understand the gratification, the more we know the danger that are inherent in them. The more we understand the danger, The Buddha, in that first quote I read, the Buddha said he understood just how far the gratification extends, just how far the danger extends. The danger extends to the attachment to sense pleasure. So as we understand the danger of sense pleasure, we see that it's the clinging, the wanting, the attachment that ties us to the sense pleasure. Letting go of that attachment is the escape from sense pleasure. The escape not being an avoidance, but one scholar talked about the escape being the kind of wise escape you would make if you saw a fire approaching your home. The escape to flee something that is dangerous. So in this process of understanding the pathway towards the escape from sense pleasure, we can move through the levels of pleasure that the Buddha talked about. There's the level of sense pleasure itself, the level of the meditative pleasure. It's easier to let go of sense pleasure if you understand a more satisfying form of pleasure. This meditative pleasure too, though, the pleasure of concentration, the pleasure of stilling the mind, of settling the mind, it's very lovely to be in that space. And it doesn't take... The concentration is about letting go. It's about letting go of the mind that is scattered, the mind that's restless, the mind that is angry, the mind that is frustrated. It's about letting go of all of that, about letting go of wanting. And in that process of letting go, the mind starts to feel pretty comfortable with just being here in this moment, paying attention to the breath, not much need for anything else. And we can get attached to that pleasure too. And then the Buddha talks about essentially understanding the gratification, danger, and escape from that kind of pleasure also. The pleasure of insight, of understanding non-clinging, is the highest pleasure, the highest happiness. Such a subtle kind of pleasure, it might not even be considered pleasure. But maybe you've tasted moments of this. Even moments where if you're caught by something, caught by a mind state or caught by a frustration, and then you realize with mindfulness, oh, this is just a mind state arising. This is just anger arising. In a moment, you might move from being caught in that state to just simply being, oh, there's that feeling arising in the mind and body. And we let go of that. So even for moments, you can begin to see how the insight of non-attachment, because essentially we are attached to our clinging, we cling to our moods and our emotions through this doorway of me, mine, my anger, I am angry. He, she, they should not have done that to me. So we cling to those states. And as we begin to see that we can simply turn back and even for a moment see a little bit of openness around that, we get a taste of that non-clinging, a taste of what it means that pleasure of insight, a taste of the pleasure of non-clinging, even for just a fleeting moment. And that begins also to support our ability to let go. If you try this exercise I suggested a little while ago, even with a simple craving, like a wanting a candy bar or a wanting something that's pretty minor, if you observe that wanting and don't act on it, and observe that wanting until it disappears. In my experience, when I've actually been able to see the disappearance of the wanting, it's like being released from a vice grip. That feeling is just, oh. That recognition of the release of a self-imprisonment. We imprison ourselves through this wanting. So the Buddha offers us this path in exploring an understanding of sense pleasure that starts from our common sense understanding that sense pleasure is gratifying. So look at where you're experiencing pleasure. There's no need to say, oh, I'm experiencing pleasure. I shouldn't be experiencing pleasure. The instruction is to understand that sense pleasure, not to be averse or avoid it. Understand that sense pleasure. Understand whether there's any suffering in the process of that sense pleasure. Now, this may take some time to really see. So you may not see the suffering. That's fine. You may get to just appreciate the beautiful feelings of joy that come with the something of having something. You may just get to feel the lightness and the happiness of that having. And that's fine. Just keep looking. Keep exploring. Whenever there's that sense pleasure. And what happens when that sense pleasure ends? What's the feeling when that sense pleasure ends? So if you're not experiencing suffering in the observing of sense pleasure, just keep observing. You might be observing the happiness of non-clinging, but you might also just not quite be able to see the suffering that's underneath it yet. That's fine. Just notice what you can about the sense pleasure. So I particularly appreciate that about this teaching of the Buddha. And he doesn't ask us to just simply jump over the sense pleasure and say, you know, avoid it. He says, understand it. So he meets us where we are with this common sense understanding that sense pleasure is gratifying and asks us to explore it. So this process of understanding sense pleasure takes us essentially through the Four Noble Truths. As we understand the gratification, as we deeply understand that gratification, we really start to see that wanting is the source of a deep suffering. As we understand the danger of that wanting, that danger we see is the suffering, the First Noble Truth. And as we understand that danger, we begin to see the escape, which is the path, the Fourth Noble Truth, the path towards cultivating mindfulness, cultivating concentration, cultivating wisdom. And we also get to actually experience, maybe even in just small moments, the actual escape or freedom from suffering as we explore this in our experience. So, are there any questions or comments about this teaching?
Is So you talked about the craving towards pleasure. Could you speak a little bit about the difference between aversion to pain?
Well, they're both a form of craving. There's actually one teaching where the Buddha says that, I'll actually read it to you. Being contacted by a painful feeling, he seeks delight in sense pleasure. For what reason? Because the uninstructed worldling does not know of any escape from painful feeling other than sense pleasure. So that essentially in that movement to move away from something painful, we are seeking something pleasant, even if it's simply the elimination of the pain, which would be pleasant, the elimination of the pain. So there, it is also a form of craving in that we crave to eliminate the pain. You know, in my experience, aversion has this quality of, you know, sometimes when people are averse to things that if I'm averse to this podium, I'm averse to this thing, then I might approach that aversion by simply saying, well, I don't like you, so I'm going to pay attention to the bell. I like the bell. That's one approach to avoiding something we don't like, that something we're averse to. If this podium is causing me pain, avoid the pain by moving to something pleasant. Another way that we do it, and this tends to be my approach, is that I get stuck to the podium trying to get rid of it. So it's like, you know, there's crazy glue on my hands, you know. How do I get rid of this thing? So that's another form of attachment. But the attachment is to the getting rid of. So it is ultimately towards the pleasure of the fact that if I could get rid of this thing, then I would be happy. So there's the similarity in the sense that our mind still has that movement towards, there's the attachment towards some outcome. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. But what I'm also thinking of is the difference when someone has like a severe searing pain. And I mean, the Buddha spoke about this somewhat when he was talking about the people with leprosy, that they would prefer to burn themselves than to feel the searing pain of an open wound, that would somehow make it feel better. But, you know, there are a lot of people here who have chronic searing pain. And I guess that one story dealt with it fine, but
the experience of the chronic searing pain will be worse if there is aversion to it than if you can just be with the experience of it. So that added aversion actually exacerbates the problem. So that is part of the, you know, we think we're going to try to control something by, you know, of being averse to it. It's like, if I could only get rid of this thing, but that if only could get rid of is actually making this chronic searing pain worse. And it's not going to make it go away. I mean, there are some people that have that, you know, that nothing, essentially, I mean, can really take care of it. One of the reflections, and this will be the last thing because it's 1 minute after nine, so one of the reflections that the Buddha uses, and this may not be too helpful. We'll see how people think about it. But he asks people to reflect sometimes that, you know, that pain will end. And he says, perhaps the only, you know, that perhaps the pain will only end at the death of this body, but that the pain will end. So that to reflect on the impermanence of the pain, in a sense, and he even puts out that, well, you know, at the death of the body, this pain will end. That's kind of an odd kind of reflection for us. But there's also, you know, as the mind can get more and more settled, it actually can start to see that everything appears and disappears in an instant. And so that pain, which seems so completely solid and immovable, is actually coming and going really quickly, to the point where it feels like it's solid, but it is not. And when we can start to see that, if you can settle yourself in meditation enough to see that the pain actually comes and goes really quickly, you'll actually see that the aversion is kind of what's making a block out of it. That's the aversion is what's making it seem solid. Without the aversion, it becomes just much more fluid and easier to be with in that sense, because you actually see, oh, there are split seconds where it's just poof, it's gone, and then oh, it's back, and then oh, it's gone, and oh, it's back. So that begins to support, as the concentration deepens, that begins to support the mind's ability to let go of the aversion, which in turn supports the acceptance, essentially, of the pain. So that maybe wasn't terribly satisfying, but. Thank you all for your attention. Sorry I went over.